You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from April 1st, 2002.
I don't know if you all know this or not, but Whitley Strieber, a very good friend of mine, co-authored the book War Day, one of the best written on the topic. There have been many, many good ones. I think I've seen every movie and written read every book on nuclear war that's been out, including On the Beach, with both the original and the HBO remake, which was awesome. Now, I've always wondered, Bonnie, in a full nuclear exchange, would the rather immediate aftermath of that perhaps unfold as On the Beach suggested it would, with the, you know, the Northern Hemisphere, and of course the Northern Hemispheres, I guess I ought to say, all going into virtual dead zones, and then of course with the winds the way they are, bringing the whole thing down eventually to Australia and ending all life. Is that how it comes out?
Yeah, pretty much. Not something I really... it's so depressing to even think about that. But yes, that's what would happen. One of the things that we fought desperately to do during a Hand of God war game was to prevent that from happening if we could. Uh-huh. For example, we knew that there was no way we could prevent enough nuclear weapons getting to our country to save our country.
Right.
But we could shoot down enough of them so that the radioactivity would fade out before it took all life on Earth. So it was a matter of preserving, if we could,
human
the
life.
Chance for life.
Mm-hmm.
And those were depressing war games to play. Because, you know, while you're fighting the battle, fight, you know, ground interceptors, put some more sensors up in the air so we can deter, and then somebody would tap you on the shoulder and you'd look at the map and you'd say, oh, I'm dead.
Huh.
I'm out of the game.
Out of the game.
Yeah.
But it really would unwind that way in a full nuclear exchange, with eventually the entire world being enveloped in lethal amounts of radiation.
Right. End of the world.
And a true end of the world.
Yeah.
The cockroaches, they'd survive?
Right. Pretty soon, you know, couple of hundred millennia from now, there'd be the Art Bell cockroach interviewing the Bonnie Ramsey cockroach. Do you think the new, you know...
What about the scientific theories that suggested there would be a nuclear winter? Is that is there substance to that, do you believe?
I guess
it was suggested that so much debris
right,
would be thrown up into the high atmosphere.
It would be very similar to what happened with the meteor that killed the dinosaurs. You would create a blocking effect of the sun's rays. Everything would cool down. Once you started the cooling down, it would cause an ice age. And you would end up with, you know, the few people who had survived, if they survived, would not then be able to plant or grow anything because the world would be glaciated just as it was back in the ice age. Damn stuff.
I just don't know how you could have... And of course, ultimately, you didn't. You said you began to have nightmares about it. Were you having nightmares about these scenarios?
I was, but not the massive scenarios, because very shortly after we started doing wargaming, we began to realize that that sort of conflict was becoming less and less of a potential, because not only were we bringing our nuclear weapons, our nuclear bombs down in levels, but also the Soviet Union was. Also, the... It was so interesting, Art. The one of the first war games we played with Blue, which is our forces.
Oh yes, uh-huh.
We played several missile defense war games where we did not have any Blue assets in the field. Essentially, we would play as though we had no nuclear weapons. Well, the first time we played Blue, we had been playing for a year, basically shooting down incoming weapons, but not doing anything in return.
Uh-huh.
So we played this war game, and I don't know who it was, China or the Soviet Union, sent over a very small-scale attack. And we're all getting ready to do the usual. You know, we shoot down the small-scale attack, we call them up on the phone and say, let's talk, you know, we don't need to end the world here. And all of a sudden, all these lights started going over the United States, and we looked, and all the missiles are coming out of all the silos all across the United States.
Firing back.
They've launched everything. And we turned and we looked at the blue guys, you know, the blue asset guys, and they were like, what? That's what we do. If you see a nuke coming, you launch everything you have.
And is that what you think we would do if we saw nukes coming?
Not after we got through with those guys. I mean, there were people who lost their jobs because of that war game. What they did is they were under the old Cold War concept, which is that, yes, you see nukes coming, there's nothing you can do about it. You send what you have back, you know, everybody kisses their
butts
fanny goodbye.
Yeah,
yeah. They were operating under the old Cold War rules. And
well, all right, here's a little game for you. Let's play a few games. Suppose, for example, over an issue like, oh, God, who knows, Taiwan, maybe.
Yeah.
Let's say the Chinese have, you know, they've blustered that they could fire a nuclear device, say, at Los Angeles.
Right.
And do that from a submarine, and they probably could. If Los Angeles went up in a white flash, what do you think the U.S. response would be?
Well, I would hope that Los Angeles would not go up in a white flash.
Yeah, we all hope that, but I'm just asking.
But, you know, when that thing comes up on the radar, the missile defense system goes into operation and we shoot that puppy out of the sky.
We try.
Yes, we try. In the case of weapon of mass destruction, our response has always been that we reserve the right to use a weapon of mass destruction in response. But that doesn't mean that we have to. And we fought war games where we lost several cities and did not respond in a nuclear fashion because we didn't need to. We could take those countries on without nuking them. It was not a situation where we needed to use nukes.
You know, it's interesting, Bonnie, and this will, of course, been way since you're out of the war games business, but...
Mm-hmm.
Gee whiz, Bonnie, the other day, the President of the United States made a statement about sort of a rethinking of the use of nuclear weapons.
Right, the Nuclear Posture Review.
Yeah, that's right. And the British did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like two gongs went off in my head. And I said to myself, oh, the important story is really, if you look very carefully, this is a major change, probably in response to 9/11 and what they might see coming after 9/11, but it sounds like they're getting ready to justify the use of nuclear weapons. That's what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
How did it sound to you?
Well, we played. I thought it sounded like a psyop to me, psychological operation.
Think so?
That Pentagon office they shut down.
Yeah.
What'd they do? Box it up and move it across the street? I don't know. I think they were doing.
Just saber rattling?
Well, more than that, we have always had the option to use a weapon of mass destruction against a weapon of mass destruction. And I say those words very carefully.
Yes.
A weapon of mass destruction includes smallpox. It includes sarin gas.
Yes.
What they were saying to Saddam Hussein, who is frantically attempting to develop a hardened Ebola and a smallpox that's resistant, is that if he uses those against the United States, that's a weapon of mass destruction, and we'll nuke him.
You know, yeah, that's kind of what I thought we were saying, too.
Right. And so what they're saying is, as a preemption, they are saying, don't do it, we're serious. Don't even try it.
Yeah, you better be listening here. We'll turn you to dust.
Yeah, and let's hope and pray that that doesn't happen, because... Obviously, there are many people in Baghdad who hate Saddam Hussein a whole lot more than I do. They have been under his jackboot for a generation.
But either way, our side, their side, millions of innocents potentially die.
Most yes, potentially. And I believe that the saber rattling, and that's a really good way to put it, the saber rattling was done as an attempt to prevent such a thing from occurring. Because we don't want to do that.
That's a warning to people that you would think are thinking rationally in some sense. People who take over airliners and crash them into buildings and the Pentagon and stuff like that, from our point of view, are not thinking rationally. I'm not saying from their point of view it's not rational, but from our point of view it's completely irrational. So threatening them with utter annihilation might not register the way we would imagine it would register on us?
Yeah, I would hope that it would register in some sense. It's essentially telling the bully in the schoolyard, you're going to punch his lights out.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And if he, you know, if he tries. The other thing I think it does is signal.
Which would work for a normal bully.
Right, for a normal bully, not a psycho. One of the problems, though, I think with the world opinion thingy, which I'm not an expert on, is that a weapon of mass destruction has been understood to be nuclear. I think that the United States is making it very clear to our allies, as well as our enemies, that a weapon of mass destruction includes biological and chemical weapons.
Yes.
So, and we don't have, we don't develop smallpox that kills people. We don't develop Ebola that's hardened so that it's, you know, resistant to antibiotics.
Yes, could in fact Ebola be weaponized to the degree that it would live long enough to propagate itself in the horrible manner that we could imagine it might propagate if it didn't, you know, it's like Ebola seems like a brush fire. It's so horrible that it burns itself out very quickly.
Right. You need to make it a little bit less deadly so that it has time to spread.
And exactly.
Saddam Hussein hired a bunch of starving, essentially, Russian scientists.
To do exactly that.
To do exactly that. Oh, and here's something. Here's a little clue from the, you know, defense biz. There is a bomb that was tested in Afghanistan recently. Not the Daisy Cutter, but something called a thermobaric bomb. Did you hear about that one?
Yes, ma'am.
The big incendiary thing, you know, fire, and then it sucks all the oxygen out of the cave structure. People within the cave structure are suffocated.
Right.
And anyone within the path of the bomb itself, of course, is incinerated.
Yes. Thermobaric, it was called.
Thermobaric bomb. Yeah, very nasty sounding. Why did we test this in Afghanistan? Well, you know, obviously we want to kill Al-Qaeda, and that's a good way to kill Al-Qaeda.
Right.
However, if you attack a biological facility, you don't want to throw a big dusty bomb on top of it that throws essentially pieces and parts of that facility into the air. What you want to do is you want to incinerate that facility and not disturb it. So you basically burn it out without potentially, let's say, for example, throwing particles into the air which might infect someone several miles away.
So the thermobaric bomb might not have been a spiffy idea?
Oh, I think that the thermobaric bomb's idea, the reason we tested it in Afghanistan, is so that we can use it against a biological facility.
Oh, I see.
Of Saddam Hussein's, yeah, thermobaric. Oh, all of a sudden it doesn't seem so nasty after all.
Right.
Because I don't, just to think one guy gets sick and then he's in Baghdad and he gets on a plane.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you know the scenario, you know the drill. I don't even like to think about that.
That is, unfortunately, probably a more likely today kind of 2002 scenario than nuclear, all-out nuclear war for sure, isn't it?
Yes, and that's a good thing, isn't it? You know, my job as a war gamer.
I don't know if it's a good thing. I'm not sure.
But yeah, everybody's had a cold.
There's lots
Nobody's been involved in a nuclear war, but we've all had colds.
That's
and
right.
To think of that happening is so horrifying.
I even get jittery when we start getting reports all across the nation of these strange rashes. These kind of stories, now it's probably nothing, but, you know, from coast to coast in Nova Scotia, everywhere, I've got stories of these strange rashes suddenly developing. Well, people don't say it, and I'm not certainly saying it now, but, I mean, who's to say that something like that is not, they have no idea what it is. It doesn't mean that somebody caught something and is a precursor to something else, and we just live in very, very strange times. After 9/11, everybody, of course, is on edge,
mm-hmm.
and almost expecting something biological. In fact, our government was saying, you know, they were talking about smallpox so much, I was like waiting for the other shoe to fall. They were talking so much about smallpox that I thought, it's coming. They know it's coming, and that's why they're talking about it.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think they're afraid it's coming. We certainly know more about the Russians and their biological facilities than we know about Hussein's biological facilities. But what we know about the Russian facilities is really scary. And
what do we know that you can tell?
The Ebola, they were working on hardening Ebola, just as you said, to make it a little less deadly so that it could spread more. Then there's smallpox, obviously. And I just have to laugh. I clipped an article out of the paper a while back. A woman, a scientist, was going up. This was before 9/11, when such things seemed scary but kind of charming. She was going up to the Arctic Circle to dig up a couple of victims of the 1918 flu epidemic.
Oh, yes, I read that story.
I was horrified, Art. I thought, what the heck are you doing? The 1918 flu epidemic could have been a hemorrhagic fever. The stories that have come from that made it seem, the historical record makes it seem as though that was no flu. It killed people way too rapidly and killed them dreadfully.
And I too thought, what the hell are you doing up there? I mean, why are we doing this? They will get perfectly preserved samples of this mass killing stuff. Of course, it's ostensibly to take it back and figure out some sort of, inoculation against it. That would be the, you know, the blue side, wouldn't it?
I guess so, or to find out whether or not what kind of sickness it really was. You know, sometimes scientific investigation can go a little too far. I just didn't think she needed to do that. And luckily, it turned out that the bodies were decomposed and they could not get...
Good.
But I know.
Yeah, but Captain trips all the way, right?
Exactly. A very Stephen King sort of scenario.
The first hour of King's The Stand, of course, was... that stood the hair up on the back of my neck. Those first scenes from The Stand. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do. And the way that our country and our world is networked together... with travel really makes that a potential reality. If something gets loose, it could go everywhere.
Well, if the Russians are working on these things,
or were,
and the Chinese are, and I think they probably are as opposed to were, don't we have to be
vigilant?
I didn't say vigilant.
No,
if they're working, if other people are working on these things, then don't we, in a way, we have to work on them? We might not say we're working on them. We might say we're working defensively, but there are offensive aspects to this kind of work as well, right?
I think so. That's one of the places I didn't get into, Art. I applied for a job at the United States Army Aeromedical Research Center. And I didn't get in there. Darn it. I ended up flying helicopters instead, or flying in helicopters, which was a lot of fun, doing helicopter crash investigation. But I tried to get in there because I thought, now, what are they doing?
Right.
You know, is it good? Is it bad?
Well, I mean, they have to be actively coming up with defenses if they know Russia or whoever is working on these things. And in that effort to get a defense against it, you have to be able to create it, which means you have to have it. Hold on, Bonnie. We're already at the top of the hour. My guest is Bonnie Ramphin. She was a war gamer for the Department of Defense. We will be right back, I think.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from April 1st, 2002.